It's Tuesday, the 23rd of June, day 94. One of the plus sides of the lockdown is that it gives one an opportunity to read more than one might do if engaged in the ordinary business of pre-pandemic life. Among the books I've been deeply absorbed in is Zachary Carter's fine new biography of John Maynard Keynes, the greatest economist of the 20th century. I've now got to the point in the book which covers the genesis and emergence of Keynes' great work, The General Theory of Employment, Interest and Money. I've got a copy of the book, though at the moment it's in my office in college, and thus inaccessible. But it stands accusingly there on my bookshelf, because I've made several attempts to read it in the past, and gave up each time. Reading Carter's biography has been a revelation, because it suggests that one of my problems with the general theory was that I was trying to read it as a treatise on economics, rather than as a book about power, democracy, and inequality. Or to put it more pompously, I'd been trying to read Keynes in a state of context collapse. I hadn't known enough about his life and career to understand where he was coming from, and why he had embarked on such an abstruse tome. As Carter tells it, the first half of Keynes's life had seen him become the world's leading public intellectual. His book, The Economic Consequences of the Peace, published in 1919, an excoriating attack on the Versailles Treaty, had made him world famous. He was a global celebrity on speaking terms with political leaders and policymakers everywhere. He had made tons of money on the stock market, owned a country estate, and was married to a world-famous Russian ballerina. He owned and ran a major weekly journal of ideas, and anything he wrote would find ready publication in the London or the New York Times. When Franklin Roosevelt was embarking on his first term as president and his famous New Deal, Keynes wrote a long essay directed at the president and his advisers, which was published in the New York Times, and which led to an invitation to see Roosevelt. "I saw your friend Keynes," FDR wrote to one of his assistants. "He left a whole rigmarole of figures. He must be a mathematician rather than a political economist." What Keynes eventually realized was that the access and voice he had as a public intellectual counted for little when the people who advised presidents and prime ministers subscribed to economic ideas that were fundamentally flawed. Roosevelt, for example, understood the need for massive public spending to rebuild the economy, but he and his advisers were devout believers in balanced budgets, and so the money for renewal would have to come from taxes. So, Keynes realized, what he had to do first was to convince the misguided economic and banking priesthoods of the errors of their ways, and for that he needed a great work of theory. This came as a great consolation to yours truly, because it meant that I was not the target audience for the general theory. And as I realized that, I was reminded of the famous story about Peter Jay, a grandee who was economics editor of the London Times for a while, in which paper he published a weekly encyclical on economic policy, the public sector borrowing requirement, and other abstruse matters. One week, a new young sub-editor was assigned to sub the piece, and, puzzled by some things in it, he went to Jay to ask for clarification. "Young man," Jay is supposed to have said, "that column is addressed to three people, and you are not one of them." So Keynes wasn't talking to me either.